This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are here live, here on live on Pet Life Radio and on my Instagram. And everyone's being told now the show starting. It is 9 a.m. here in the West. It is noon in the East and wherever in between. And you're here live with Dr. Jeff Werber, your host for the next 30 minutes here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vets with Dr. Jeff. Ivy Blue Eyed, hello. Number one today. Cloud Chaser, hi. Number two. So anyway, as you know, the drill, I'm here for you. I'm here for your pets. Deb, how you doing? Everything you need, anything you want to ask, now is the time to do it because the advice is free. And I always say, anything that you think is a weird thing, and you know, if you ask, and am I the only one having this problem? Trust me, you're not the only one. So every time you have a question, anything, it's really good because then Kelly Davies, wow. So another neighbor there, Sharon, how you doing? Kelly, how are you? Yes, it's interesting. Every now and again, last week I had my friend Steve Stabler, people that I knew from high school. It's just so bizarre coming in. Anyway, hey, that's why I'm here. So waving hello, hello, Eloise, how you doing? Vicky, you got a wonderful compliment this week from one of my clients I sent to you for training. And they said, oh my God, Vicky is the best. JB, how are you? So good morning, good morning, good morning. So anyway, tell me what's up. First of all, one thing I want to talk about is as I'm waking up this morning, here in LA at least, it is a stunning day, sun is shining, and I'm seeing a couple of things that are associated with spring. First of all, good weather. We love that. Hopefully in many parts of the country, you're getting good weather. I know that back east, it's not the case. And certainly last week in Hawaii, it was not the case. Crazy, crazy. Pancreatitis in dogs, preventable from what we feed them. So Katie Poo, yes, that is a great, great, great question. So let's talk about it. So pancreatitis, it's a very interesting organ because it's an exocrine organ and an endocrine organ. That means the exocrine part is digestive enzymes, lipase, amylase, things like that, that those come from the pancreas. There are ducts that go into the small intestine and they feed, and that's what helps our metabolism and our digestion and getting the most out of these nutrients and break them down. Then you also have endocrine function. Endocrine function is, there are these cells called islets of Langerhans, and they are ones that produce insulin. So when you have a pancreatic problem, not only is there a problem with the exocrine port, which is the digestive enzymes, but also the endocrine hormone, which is insulin. So it's a very sensitive organ and very important. As I'm sure you know, sadly, that you probably have had people, known people in the past that had this, one of the worst cancers one can have is pancreatic. And that's why. It's really, really tough. So anyway, the pancreatitis is when the pancreas gets inflamed. And when it gets, first of all, one of the things associated with pancreatitis is pain. These animals, these dogs are extremely painful. And also, we'll see a lot of vomiting. So when you have a dog that's ADR, ain't doing right, doesn't want to eat, you palpate, the doctor will palpate the abdomen, meaning feel it, and it's very, very tender to the touch. Even a good dog, just to put in perspective how painful it can be, will turn around and bite, try to bite when you're palpating their abdomen. And of course, they're going to have weird stool and they're going to have vomiting. So what causes it? Well, the number one cause probably is too much fat in the diet. When that dog, and I had one such dog, my first lab, Thor, he was, as typical of Labradors, he was a garbage hound. He could not walk by a garbage can and not attack it. So anything inside was fair game. You know, you talk about child locks. No, we had to have a dog lock because he would figure out how to open cabinets to get to a garbage can. So when the dogs get into it and they eat the remains, the leftover of the fatty bones, the marrow, very, very high in fat, and the part of the meat that you would throw away, the fat part, that's what the dogs like. Actually, fat for dogs and cats is tasty. So that's one of the things they do that. So anyway, so it is very important that you need to help have your dogs avoid fatty foods. That's why we say when they are sick and when you're talking about content and different contents, the percentage of fat, you want to feed more lower fat foods, especially if a dog that's sensitive to the pancreatitis. So the only way to prevent it is, well, first of all, keep your dogs healthy, of course, but keep them away from getting too much fat. Don't feed them too much fat. Don't feed them scraps from the table if they're not used to it. And remember, the amount of fat is also relative. If a dog's never had any fat, even a little bit could actually cause a problem. So the key really is caution. Caution on your part to keep your dogs away from getting the fat. Once they have it, man, it can be very, very tough to treat. And if I tell you we need to put them on IV fluids, some things you don't want to do, Ivy got pancreatitis from stress, seeing a suitcase, knowing I was leaving. That's unusual. That is unusual. Usually dogs get stressed. Oh my God. Yes. Dogs, when they see the suitcase coming out, they start to panic. I hear that all the time. But getting pancreatitis, I guess, look, nothing surprises me. You know, typically the way they're going to get it by eating too much fat or eating something wrong. It's usually, the cause is usually more dietary than anything else. But could it be stress? Of course it can. Hey, stress can break down a lot of systems and cause a lot of problems. So it doesn't surprise me at all. So anyway, treating pancreatitis, major, major, major fluids, controlling the vomiting, very important. And one thing about it, I don't want to go into it too much, but when dogs get a hold of something out of the garbage, what is sometimes, depending on the history, and something you need a very specific history, what does the doctor want to do? They want to induce vomiting. Whatever it is that may be in there causing the problem, they want to get rid of it. But if a dog has already vomited a lot, then don't make them vomit again. Because if whatever was in there could come up with vomiting, it would have come up already. So by the fact that it didn't, don't make them vomit more, because they're going to get them more dehydrated. They're going to get them sicker, etc. So fluids, even if you put a fluid, we always joke, double fluids. We put them up of catheter into each side, each vein, and really pump them up with the fluids. That is one of the most important things. And then just keeping them calm. You want to, as I said, pain medication is critical, because these dogs are really, really painful. And time, they're usually hospitalized for a number of days and monitored carefully. And again, most of the time, they can be pulled out of a bout of pancreatitis. All right. Okay. Now, how much water? It varies. There are charts. It depends on like activity, how much water they're burning, if they're sitting. So there's always like a maintenance. And there's what I usually do when I give, for example, sub-Q fluids, there's a formula I'll get up during the break. Vicky, and I'll get back to you. But based on body weight in kilograms, how much water, like it's 10 ml per kilo per pound per day, something, I'll get it for you. But it is important that they remain hydrated. But if you have a dog that's very active and they are running around more than normally, or they're working dogs, of course, their need for hydration is going to be greater. So we have to work that. Kelly, a Chihuahua with hereditary liver disease, couldn't take medication, found just food for dogs, and she has been on a hepatic diet for years now. Her ALT, I mean, it sounds like that's great. If it's hereditary, that usually means it could be some sort of liver shunt. The liver shunts are either going to be extrahepatic, which can be corrected surgically, or intrahepatic, and you can't do anything about it. So what you do is, for those, is you need to adjust, modify the diet, and that's what you'll do. I would recommend, ALT is normal. Well, that's great. So if there is a problem and you try to find the right food for them and you end up needing to resort to either like something like a just food for dogs or a home-cooked diet, there are a number of veterinary schools now, I think UC Davis included, that the Department of Nutrition will help you for a fee. They sit and they will discuss everything with you and help you develop, all right, the right recipe for this dog's problem. So you might want to take advantage of that too in the future if you have. So Eloise, do you change foods as dogs age? Yeah, I would say the answer is yes. Again, a lot of it has to do with lifestyle. You know, if you have a pup, usually puppy foods, you say up to, you know, a year, whatever. I think once they stop growing, it's adequate to shift over to the adult version. I always recommend, if you can, to stay with the same brand and the same food that you were feeding as a pup, because that way the transition won't be as aggressive on their systems, and hopefully they won't go have a GI problem, gastrointestinal problem. All right, Maria will be a minute. Yes, so as dogs become seniors, then I would recommend also, because there's certain needs in food that they don't need as much as they get older. Usually it's less protein, and plus, as they get older, we're looking at more organ dysfunctions. So it's going to be kidneys. It's going to be liver. So we want to pick a food that is going to be easier on these. So that's why I think it's important to make adjustments, talk to your veterinarian. You know, there are board certified veterinary nutritionists. So if you ever have questions, specific questions, you can always reach out to a board certified nutritionist. Most of them aren't working around freely. Hey, staff, how are you? They are working usually associated with veterinary hospitals, but there are some. We have one here in West LA that is Dr. Weiss, and she is a boarded nutritionist. So yes, it would be helpful in making adjustments. You want to often see as they get older, you're going to reduce fat. You want to, you know, reduce the amount of protein, okay? Because they don't need that much protein anymore. They're not growing, and they're usually not as active, just coming with age. So, and as I said, fat, pancreatitis. So it's important to navigate along. Now, having said that, if you have a dog, a senior dog, or let's say making that transition from a 7 to 8 or 8 to 9, that's on a food and is doing great. And at this age, and we've talked about this before, once a large breed dog is 7, small breed dog and cats are 8, then I recommend annual blood tests. And if you are on top of things and you take your pets in and you have their senior physical and their bloods and urine are fine, then don't change. I don't want to treat necessarily the test. I want to treat the dog. The dog is doing well. And then confirmed by the lab work being good, then what's your rush? So, you know, keep those things in mind. Oh, here's one from Eloise. Now, Eloise has a great rescue, Eloise Rescue, and is also a great dog trainer. And she just writes me, you can see this, as you were, 300 dogs were just put into an LA shelter. And right now people need to go foster or adopt from these shelters to save their lives. It is nuts. I don't know, Eloise, if you, Vicky, if you know where they came from, where they get 300 dogs? Was it a, wow, that's crazy. So anyway, unfortunately, guys, our LA shelters are not equipped to handle that kind of volume. And so sadly, if we don't have somebody come in, foster or adopt them, then many of them, I say that they, once they run out of room, they have to be put on the euthanasia list. So that is terrible. So if you know anybody who could be helping to use a dog, have another dog, and you, I should say, has the ability to adopt another dog or even their first, or at least foster for a while, then please reach out. Okay. It was a hoarding situation with a rescue. Isn't that crazy? Yeah, you said Ivy Blue Eyed, thanks. So Department of Animal Control sees from a rescue. That's also sad. I don't know the details. I don't know if this rescue was really doing a good job. You know, usually you think of a rescue group, oh, how wonderful, they're rescuing all these dogs. But then if they're going to not treat them well, and if they're going to, you know, hoard them, and they're going to keep them and not feed them and not take care of them, then that is terrible. And Lake Hughes, thank you guys. Okay, add insult to injury. Hold on. All the dogs are being held as evidence, creating less. Oh my God. See that? This is a problem. Even trying to help, we can't do that because now they're looking, they're going to keep these for evidence. Oh God, it's crazy. My Maltipoo, suspected to have IVDD. It's been a month and a half and has been vomiting over 24 hours, even after drinking water. Well, first of all, let's get a couple of things straight. Vomiting for over 24 hours because of the IVDD, what medicine is the Maltipoo on? Some of these medicines, after a while, if given too much, especially the steroidals and the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, could cause gastric upset. Or this could be something totally different. If it's been IVDD for a while and not on medication, or even on something medication, and maybe an alternate day dose, something on a low dose, just to maintain stability, and now all of a sudden starts vomiting, take the blinders off. It may not be related anything to do with the IVDD. It may, but it may not. So did the dog get a hold of anything in the last couple of days, right? Has things changed? Did it pick something up? Is it stressed out for another reason? So when you have, especially when you have a new symptom that was not there, even though the dog has a chronic illness or chronic disease, don't necessarily think it's because of the chronic disease. It could be something new and should be worked up. Maybe it is pancreatitis, for example. So if it's been vomiting over 24 hours, I would always, what I do is I withhold food and water. Check this out. When a dog's stomach starts vomiting, it's almost like taking a rag and wringing it out. It gets so sensitive that even something as benign as water couldn't induce vomiting again. So what I recommend in a case like this is put, like, depending on, it's a Maltipoo, maybe 2 or 3 ice cubes into an empty water bowl. As the ice melts, he or she can go up and drink that water, but it's only a small amount at a time. You don't want to have them drink so much, and they may want to because they're thirsty, that it stretches the stomach, and that is inducing more vomiting. So you got to be really careful, slow, very small amounts of water. You can, you know, do it small amounts, like every half hour, 45 minutes. And that's how they get the water. You do not want them to sit at a water bowl and lap up water. They will probably vomit again. Once that period is over, then you might be able to slowly increase the water intake per volume, I say, per attempt to drink. Now, also, very important, see your veterinarian. There are medications we can give. One, like, for example, Serenia, which I love, and that can basically handle the vomiting. Other things that are out there, Zofran, for example, ondansetron, they also anti-emetic. So there are things that can be given to at least stop the vomiting. All right, my doctor, my Frenchie Theo, their food up at times, then they try to eat it up. Why? I'm assuming you mean they vomit their food up at times, okay? And then they try to eat it up. Why? Well, first of all, dogs are dogs. They don't care what's on the ground, whether it came up from them or if you have cats and they vomit, they're going to, trust me, that's a dog. That's why even if people laugh at me if I pick up something that's been on the floor, and you know, who cares? You know, the 3-second rule, I'm about a 3-week rule. If there's an M&M on that floor, I'm going to brush it off and I'm eating it and I'm fine. Because look what dogs put into their mouth. I mean, come on, really? So anyway, so that they eat it because they like it and they're still hungry. So sometimes they don't, you know, if we vomit for some reason, we know we don't feel good. The last thing we want to do is eat again. We're not dogs. Oh, some of us are. But anyway, that's a dog thing. And they will, and they don't really care who's around, who cares. To them, that's something they can eat. Anyway, don't go away. We'll be back after these few short minutes for Mark to play our sponsor commercials here on Pet Life Radio. And we'll be back in a minute.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell she was very alert. She was going on 5-mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets. Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We are back here at Pet Life Radio talking about hypoallergenic dogs. So again, there are many of the poodle cross breeds. The Maltese seem to be less allergenic. So just do your homework. I will tell you that they're the biggest luck I've had are the poodles and the poodle crosses. And people say that they've been pretty good, even though they've had allergic reactions to other breeds. Look, Taz has arthritis, and okay, learned that Taz has arthritis in his right hip. Seems to progress fast. He's having an issue. Like he's getting lazy. They put him on gabapentin. Okay, so first of all, how old is Taz? And if Taz is an older dog with arthritis, then yeah, it happens. I would also try the gabapentin for pain. I would even maybe try Librela if that works for you. Talk to your veterinarian. I would try acupuncture, laser therapy. So there are a lot of things that we can do kind of more localized that can help with arthritis pain, especially if it's pain in one particular area, one joint, but also with something that is progressing fast. I hate to say it. I would like to see that. I wouldn't mind seeing the x-rays for you because I had a case, speaking like earlier, my high school classmates, a high school classmate hopped on and I ended up taking a look at his dog. They were battling a lameness in a leg that was going on for a while. Doctor couldn't figure it out. He wrapped the leg. I said, bring him in. I'll take a look. And I took a look, took x-rays, and it turns out it was bone tumor. So I just think that when any problem seems to be progressing. Arthritis is a slow, progressive disease. It doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't really sort of get worse faster. So if you tell me that of late, all of a sudden, it's been progressing faster than normally, I would want to make sure that there's nothing else going on. And if, for example, I've had dogs that tear a cruciate ligament, I take x-rays, all right, and there's a torn cruciate, but I also notice hip dysplasia. But were they limping before the injury? No. When you have a slowly progressive disease, it's sort of like their bodies are adapting all the time, or it's a generalized stiffness that you don't really can't look localized to a leg. So when it's a more localized lesion, it could have been an old injury to the hip, then now it is getting worse, but it's not like a day by day. So if this is progressing very rapidly, I'd be looking for something else. All right. Hello, Gina. Prednisone got pain. So prednisone is good. I like that. But I don't like keeping prednisone on too often because prednisone has effects on the liver and it can cause gastric irritation. So I have a dog on Pred. I usually keep it on what's called a decreasing dose. I start with twice a day dose. I go to once a day and then I go to every other day. And then I try to go every third day. The whole idea is to try to taper down to allow the body to handle the prednisone more easily with less issues. So let me know how much prednisone you've been giving and based on the body weight. That's important for me to know. Anyway, so Pred is a drug of choice for sure. And I'm glad that when it comes to disc disease, gabapentin is for pain. That's good. There are some other medicines for pain that are really good though. And I love gabapentin. It's one of my fave. But the prednisone, which I do like, I at least try to get them to every other day. That's important. Novox, also 75 milligrams of gabapentin in 100. Okay. Yeah, the Novox is carprofen, which is the vetiprofen, carprofen, limidil, flexprofen. It's been on the market so long, there's a zillion brands that are making it. I like it a lot. It's a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, 75 milligrams. The gabapentin, 100, love that. I love gabapentin. Seems to work well. Zenrelia versus Apoquil. But first of all, Zenrelia is a little more expensive, and they're both expensive. Don't get me wrong. I really like them both. The problem is the Apoquil has a 20-hour half-life, which means that after 20 hours, it stops working. And I mean, it stops working. So, which is why when we give Apoquil, we give it in the evening because 20 hours, let's say you give it 8 p.m. So 20 hours after 8 p.m. is 4 p.m. the next day. Whereas if you give it in the morning at 8 a.m., 4 a.m. the next day, what's usually the family doing at 4 a.m.? Still sleeping. So the dog wakes up. Now that Apoquil is worn and they started being in pain. All right. I mean, they're scratching. They're scratching because the skin disease and there's nothing to distract them. There's no one to say, hey, cut it out. But if you give it in the evening and then the next evening at 4 p.m. when it's really not working anymore, before you have 4 hours to kill. Well, it is dinner time and the kids are home from school and they go out for their walk, whatever. There's enough there to keep their brain off of their skin and scratching. Now, Zenrelia has over 24-hour half-life. So for 24 hours, you have protection. So you can give it morning, you can give it in the evening. So in that way, they say it's a little bit easier to manifest, to maneuver around your scheduling. You know, I like them both. I have them both, by the way, but it is more expensive. So look, having said that, my favorite still is Cytopoint. Cytopoint's my fave. They say it's good for a month. I've had dogs go 6 weeks, even 8 weeks. And again, it's a really good. There is a disadvantage, though. There is a difference between Zenrelia, Apoquil, and Cytopoint. And that is, it's getting a little too scientific, and I don't like getting too scientific with you. However, the culprit in most cases of canine allergy is a transmitter. It's a cellular mediator of the inflammation released from the T helper cell, it's called, and it's interleukin 31. Cytopoint is anti-interleukin 31. It blocks the IL-31 as soon as it leaves the T helper cell, takes it out, it's neutralized. The way normally after IL-31 is released from the T helper cell, it travels to the skin, and with the help of these two enzymes, Janus kinase 1 and Janus kinase 3, called JAK1 and JAK3 for short, that's where Zenrelia and Apple come in. They block JAK1 and JAK3. So if you have an allergy that is mostly 99% mediated by interleukin 31, Cytopoint's the way to go. But many dogs that have allergies, there are other interleukins that aren't going to respond to Cytopoint, but also need JAK1 and JAK3. So with those, maybe Apoquil and Zenrelia is better. So it's just trying them out and see what works best for you. Both pretty expensive. Can cold water cause a dog to cough? Again, that's not something I would say yes or no. If you have a dog that seems, when it's exposed to cold water or drinking cold water and coughing, then the answer is yes. But I will tell you that some dogs with tracheal issues will, when they drink, especially when they drink quickly, they'll cough after drinking water. It also may have to do with the body position when they're kneeling down into the water bowl and it's putting some pressure on the trachea. Bethany, you're late to the show today. That's my sis. Oh, by the way, I should let them. I think, Beth, you know this already. So my daughter, my crazy daughter, Shane, just had her third baby. It's another boy. It's three boys. But what's so crazy about this is she's not anti-medicine. She actually wants to be a registered nurse anesthetist. But her first two the same, would only deliver with a midwife. So she was going to be due today, Sunday. She gave birth Tuesday, 5 days early. And she felt early on in the day, she felt some contractions. So she reached out to the midwife and said, I'm starting to have contractions already. And of course, the midwife said, well, you know, that can happen. It could be 24, 48 hours before. So anyway, they started getting worse. She calls again. The midwife is on her way and the baby didn't want to wait. So my daughter tells her 7-year-old son, my grandson, fill the tub with water. My daughter gets into the tub on her own, no epidural, no help. No anyone help me pushing, and delivers my grandson. Just like that, in the tub. And then the midwife got there like 6-7 minutes after the birth, and they did the umbilical cord and all that. But she's nuts. Anyone out there who's had babies, can you imagine doing this completely on your own with no help, no pain, no nada, in a bathtub? So anyway, it worked for her. Kid's doing great. But anyway, I know. People, when I tell this story to people, they go, is she nuts? What, is she a Wonder Woman? How do you do that? She did it. All right. Okay. Hypoallergenic really fur or hair, but no dog is... That is true. I guess that's true. There's no dog that's hypo. I would say there's no dog that's non-allergenic, okay? I think that hypo meaning less allergenic, there are some that are. And Steve, how you doing? Okay, so my sister just became a great aunt. My brother-in-law, a great uncle again. All right, Golden Doodle F1 does not make my eyes water or my arms itch like Briar Lab did. Does he shed? There's a bunnies with no hair and like. Okay, so again, this is what we notice, and I agree. My daughter's dogs are pretty hypoallergenic. My dogs, I have four. Excuse me, I have five. What am I saying? Five. My Labrador. Look, we have no one in the house now that's allergenic. I can't tell you has allergies, but I can tell you that my little terriers and my little whatever she is from China, they don't shed hardly at all. And my Labrador sheds. She's the only one that sheds. My French, she may shed, but you can't tell because his hair is so short. But they are, I don't think they're very allergenic. Okay, Taz is eight. An eight-year-old, if you don't mind, you can feel free to send me x-rays. And I'll be happy to take a look at them and throw my 2 cents in, whatever it's worth. It might help. Doesn't help dog lose 5 pounds without RX food. I'm already feeding the lowest amount on the dog food bag. Okay. Well, first of all, yes. What I tell people this is most of us feed by just eyeballing. Fill the scooper, fill the cup, whatever it is. I would say take your normal amount that your eyes say that's the amount, stick it on a little kitchen scale and get a weight. Get an exact weight. That's important. Then what you do is... You weigh that. You want to reduce, depending on how much weight needs to be lost, anywhere from 10 to 30%. So here's where you're at. Here's where you want to be. And you need to go from here to here in about 10 days, slowly. So they don't make notice the difference. Don't worry about the bag. Because the bag, when you need to lose weight, of course you're going to feed less calories. So you're not going to starve them. Trust me. So you want to just reduce the caloric content. Now, if you're really worried about the calories, then every bag will tell you how many calories per volume of that food, whether it's per cup, per ounce, whatever. So then you want to find a lower calorie food where they can get to eat the same amount of food and the same nutrient concentration, but not getting the same amount of calories. But then you want to transition to slowly. For me, if you just cut back 30%, 10%, whatever it is, depending on how much weight they need to lose and how much time you want to give it, they'll be fine. All right. You can send x-rays to my email, which is drjeff. It's a really, really, really tough email for a guy named Dr. Jeff. drjeff at drjeff.com. So drjeff at drjeff, and I'll be happy to take a look at them. Mama Sue, hello. All right, Ella. Just a shampoo, which is, thank you. Yeah, I have a shampoo called What Itch, and you're like, what itch? What are you talking about? Anyway, if you need it, reach out to me. Bordetella within a 13-year-old dog, liver disease and shunts. So no, my only question about when you get dogs this age, look, first of all, Bordetella is not a deadly disease. It's like a cold. So do I recommend it? Is it core for LA? Yes, because of our lifestyle. Dogs walking all over the place. You take your dog to the park. You take your dog for a walk. They're going to get this. It's part of the game. So I like it. But if you have a dog who's already much older, 13 years old, and isn't doing any of that, do you really need the Bordetella? You probably don't. Is it going to hurt? No, it won't hurt. So if it's the peace of mind you want, give it. It's not going to affect a 13-year-old dog with liver disease or shunts. Hello, Francesco. How you doing? Life with corgis. Hello, hello. Is it better for dogs to have raised bowls? Again, it is when they pull their head down and they have vomiting issues, regurgitation issues, even problems with the regurg or megesophagus, for example, then yes, it is better to have raised bowls. Because a lot of times there are some platforms out there that the dog has to take two steps up and then there's a platform and you put their food on the platform. So they're eating almost vertical. And for dogs with megesophagus, right? Or if they have like something like myasthenia, and with myasthenia comes megesophagus, then yes, it's great. Dogs that cough a lot after drinking water too fast or eating too fast, yes, then I'm a big fan. But I wouldn't say as a blanket rule, everybody should be feeding dogs raised. I don't. And my dogs are fine. I got five of them. So it all depends. So very specifically. Thank you, Steph. Okay. It is amazing. I think my daughter's nuts, but it is what it is. Just received a multivitamin or from Amazon with something like the allergies. So will it help? I can't promise anything. It's a good thing because it will balance out the nutrients that they need. Because of the omega-3s and the omega-6s, interestingly, we always would say the omega-3, omega-6s, and I have another product called Replenish, was really for skin-related problems. But there's a lot of studies out now. You know, we talk about glucosamine and we talk about all the joint supplements. Guess what? Omega-3s also help the joints. So it's good. It helps me help you. And that's my goal, to help you with your pets. So if you want to get Replenish, a doodle mix of the hairy dog, like a golden retriever, and then a poodle. I don't get the science. Well, you know, it's hard to tell. Whatever it is, the fact that we see this a lot, it may be whatever the allergen is that's causing these other dogs to be allergenic. When you mix them with a poodle, it may be that gene, whatever it is, the gene that doesn't have that ends up in that dog. I don't know. But I will tell you, there are plenty of doodles out there I know of that are still allergenic. So you're probably right. It's a luck. Mac Toomey, hello. So Miskins, yeah, if you guys want to join, unfortunately, I have overstayed my welcome. When I get to the point where our producer, Mark, starts giving me dirty looks, I know it's time to say goodbye. Anyway, for those of you who celebrate Passover, it's this week, Wednesday night. So have a happy Passover. And we will see you here next week. Next week is Easter Sunday, actually. So from holiday to holiday, they're always together for good reason. So anyway, we will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live. And during the week, if you ever have a problem with your pet and you don't want to wait a week, or it's something that's really important, get a hold of me here, Pet Life Radio, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com, Werbs_DVM. Just send me a message here on Instagram, or of course, my email, drjeff@drjeff.com. And have a happy holiday, and we will see you next Sunday. Have a great week, everybody.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.